Aloha, Marco Mengelsdorf here on Energy 808, the cutting edge. And we have a great show in store for everybody today. Former Commissioner Jennifer Potter joins us. We're back. We're live. Marco Mengelsdorf here at Energy 808, the cutting edge. And I am truly pleased to have my friend and energy colleague, Jennifer Potter, with us today. Wonderful to have you back, Jenny. It's been a while, and thank you so much for joining me today. And not just my guest, but I'm going to call you my co-host.
Sounds like a plan. That's great. There's only two of us, so that would work.
There we go. So I think the first question I'd like to toss out there to you is, you were at the Hawaii Public Utilities Commission for a little more than 4 years. And you decided sometime fallish or so of last year that your time at the commission had come to an end. If I'm not mistaken, I think your last day was at October 31st, I believe. And you decided to leave the commission with a bit less than 2 years left in your original 6-year term. So my first question is to you, what precipitated the departure from the commission?
Well, Marco, thank you so much for having me on and providing me with an opportunity to come and speak with you today about the many pressing issues that our state faces with energy. So yes, I left the commission early, and you know, I miss all my colleagues there. It was an incredible experience to be with them and to tackle some of the most challenging energy and, you know, even maritime challenges that we had during the whole pandemic era, and then just over my entire tenure of 4.5 years. So I, the reason that I left is I had set out when I came to the commission, I had a number of goals that I wanted to accomplish. And one of them was, you know, installing advanced metering infrastructure, which would provide customers the ability to see how they use energy throughout the day. And that would also allow for time of use rates, which would allow customers to change and modify their behavior so that they could save money on their electric bills. This was something that I worked on in Sacramento and in my time during SMUD, which is Sacramento Municipal Utility District. And we found that, you know, across the board, whether it was low to moderate income customers or customers that, you know, were of average or above income, they all were able to respond. And there was a great deal of savings that occurred to not only the grid and the energy usage and in terms of just energy efficiency, but also monetary savings to the customers. And customers felt empowered by that. And so I really wanted to bring those lessons to Hawaii and have that occur. And also another one of my goals was to really work on the distributed energy resources programs that we had in the state. That we had a lot of interim programs at the time and many that weren't really sustainable in the interest of the consumer and the ratepayers. And so really evaluating the suite of options that we had. And by the time, you know, the 4.5 years had come up, I had accomplished those goals, those things that, you know, the community-based renewable energy, grid modernization, all of these had really taken foot and were progressing along well. And it was time for me to turn my eyes to the more of the national and global energy environment in order to tackle some of the issues that were occurring basically globally with climate change, and really to try and make an impact. And so that's why I moved to Stratagem.
So you came, you saw, you conquered. You conquered as far as you wanted to. You went as far as you wanted to go. You achieved the things that you wanted to achieve. And like all good things, you know, they do come to an end at some point, and you left at a time of your own choosing. And now you're at a company called Stratagem. So how are they using your great talents?
So Stratagem is a global impact oriented company that really focuses on reducing or slowing the impact of climate change. I mean, that is really one of their main focuses. And they do that through stakeholder engagement and customer engagement, community benefits evaluations, you know, workforce development through analysis and modeling, through regulatory innovation and rate design. So really right up my alley in the work that we had done here in Hawaii, which is one thing that made it sort of an easy transition into the organization, because so much of the work that we did in Hawaii has been modeled in the, you know, the rest of the country. And so it was like, oh yeah, we're speaking my language from the work that we've done here. And so Stratagen is really carrying the mantle, you know, for the work that's been done with Hawaii. And thanks to Matt McDonald, who was at council with the commission, we've sort of joined forces in this regulatory innovative area that where we're assisting other public utilities commissions and going forth with a performance-based regulation, which is incredibly important in an era where you have so many distributed resources being implemented and consumers being able to make choices about how they generate electricity, about how they use energy, and those types of choices and decisions impact the entire grid. And so you think about how, what you need a utility to do in the future, it needs to be able to be flexible, it needs to be innovative, it needs to be adapting to the changes and iterating on its business model in order to achieve the goals not only of, you know, its own stakeholders, but also those of public policy. And so I've been really wrapped into working on performance-based regulation, but one of the most exciting parts is we've been encouraged by the Department of Energy with the Hawaii State Energy Office to pursue a grant for Hawaii that would look at equity issues and resiliency. And so this is a grant that would install, it would allow us to install 10 to 12,000 batteries to low to moderate income customers for free. There would be the opportunity to couple with the Green Infrastructure Authority and you know, finance solar in order to charge those batteries during the day. This grant would effectively bring in at least $55 million of federal funding into the state, and it would be addressing truly the most vulnerable population that that we have in the state that just literally has not been brought along in the energy transition. And so being able to still continue that focus and drive, you know, change for, you know, the consumers and the residents of Hawaii has been really, really beneficial to, I've been, and it wouldn't have happened if I was a commissioner. So I've been driving this boat and really was just, you know, putting it out there to manifest this goal, this coming forth for our low to moderate income customers and to provide us with resources that are resilient in these communities that are difficult to reach, as well as the as providing reliability and community centers having the resiliency that definitely don't have the means to afford these types of technologies, this grid edge technologies at this time. So,
well, I was just going to ask you, in fact, what, if anything, practical Stratagen is doing in Hawaii, and you already answered my question. I mean, it sounds really juicy. And by my count, correct me if I'm wrong, JD, by my count, there are around 100,000 or so rooftop PV system across the state, across Hawaiian Electric Service territories, KIUC. So when you're talking about 10 to 12,000 system storage and or PV, I mean, that's not chump change. I mean, that's a big chunk. So I think it would be fantastic to be able to get DOE funds to do that. And it's great to know that you know, that's a high priority for you, and it's high priority for Stratagen. So I'm really stoked about that. So that's great. Let's move along here to one of the juicy topics for today, which is a week ago, the Hawaii Supreme Court announced their decision 5-0 regarding Honua'ola appealing the decision you and Jay made to turn down the PPA ultimately between Honua'ola and Hawaii Electric Light Company. And the court ruled unanimously, 20-page decision, which I read line by line, and it seemed quite unmistakable to me in terms of the content and the tone. And just FYI, I did ask current president of Honua'ola, Warren Lee, to join me today. He declined. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I gave him the opportunity to appear with me, with us today, and he declined that. So you were very much part of the Honua'ola saga, I'll call it, the whole 4+ years of your tenure there at the commission. What's your take? What's your reaction to the decision of the Supreme Court a week ago?
A huge sigh of relief. It is overwhelmingly warming to know that the Hawaii Supreme Court affirmed the decision of the commission and recognized that we had upheld our statutory obligations to and our constitutional obligations to protect the rights of citizens, their right to a health and clean, a healthy and clean environment. The importance of this and the beauty of the Hamakua Coast and the impact that this type of plant could have had in the long run, as stated in the decision by the justices, doing their own math, using their own spreadsheets and their own analysis, we showed that greenhouse gas emissions would not be carbon neutral until 2047. And the one thing that keeps me up at night, day after day, is that we don't have time. We don't have enough time for combustion generation to occur in the state of Hawaii, in the state, in all the states, in all of the world. We've run out of that time. And so to know that we've stopped a plant that would be polluting for 40, for 20, 24 years, in our sweet Hawaiian islands, and trying to protect our aina and the health of our residents is incredibly, I have no words. It's just a magnificent triumph. I mean, I feel that we've been victorious and that we combed over this. We've been through the ringer on the appeals with this. We've listened to the justice's direction in the last appeal. We followed through with that. We took very careful note of every single turn along the way, and our staff did was diligent about finding, any type of error that might have occurred in those analyses so that we could correct them, and in our decision making, and make sure that we came up with the best finding and ruled with the best decision for the state of Hawaii and for the residents of Hawaii. And so this is just it's just been a it just feels so victorious after 4 years.
Well, in fact, as we both know, it's been a lot longer than 4 years as far as this odyssey. I think it goes back to 2008. So we're talking a 15-year saga. And one of the things that struck me about the ruling is that I didn't find much, I don't know about you, Jenny, I didn't find much ambiguity or nuance. I mean, it was really, in the words of Paula Dobbin in her piece on Civil Beat, she called it a quote, searing rebuke. And I wanted to run something by you, which is my reading between the lines of the decision implies to me that the notion of new power generation in Hawaii that were to be combustion-based, according to this decision, it seems to me to take that right off the table, that the justices are all but saying, well, you can try, maybe, it could be a PPA that could be advantageous in terms of a good deal for ratepayers. It could, depending on the makeup of the commission, it could conceivably make it through regulatory approval. But Henry's not planning on leaving anytime soon. And there are others in the wings as well, younger people, like, younger than Henry and I, who will certainly be keeping an eye on this. So there will be a likelihood, there would be a likelihood, and even if there was regulatory approval of new combustion generation, that it would be challenged in the court. And this, typically Supreme Court decisions is, decisions have established precedent, right? So my question to you is, do you see really any reasonable circumstances, such as maybe locally produced biodiesel that would be used to offset the importation of oil coming from great distances? Would that maybe pass muster? Or is just combustion-based new generation more or less completely off the table according to this decision? What's your take?
That's a tricky one, because I do believe that the greenhouse gas emissions are of the highest priority of this court. Their considerations of how they're reviewing and evaluating the statute 369 or 269-6B, it really outlines in detail that you must consider the cost of the energy in the framework of greenhouse gas emissions. And so if we know that biodiesel is not excluded from greenhouse gas emissions. So there is concern that even though it is locally produced and it is renewable, it may not be a long-term solution to providing firm energy to the grid under really the precedent that's been established to date, now as of last week. However, I do believe in transition fuels, and I think that there's opportunities for us to utilize resources like biodiesel on our journey to 2045 or even beyond 2045 when there are concerns that there's not enough inertia on one of our grids on one of the islands or something along those lines. There's got to be some type of wiggle room, but as you mentioned, combustion generation is just not, I don't think it's going to be part of the vocabulary for our energy mix moving forward, with the exception of biodiesel as sort of a transition fuel. It's just not going to be a long-term solution either because it's very expensive, and I don't see it getting any cheaper because it is locally produced. And even those that's imported is not inexpensive. So we have, you know, competing types of renewables that can produce very similar types of grid services. And, you know, whether they're considered firm or intermittent, you know, there's debate around what exactly falls under those categories. Those aren't black and white. There is gray area. And so it's not just combustion generation or bust. It's really, we can be creative and start thinking a little bit further down the line and more, you know, futuristically of things like green hydrogen, you know, which is actually, believe it or not, alive and well. It's doing very well. It has the attention of American Airlines and Boeing and all sorts of entities that are participating in green hydrogen coalitions in order to try and bring hydrogen hubs to areas in highly populated and dense areas so that there can be different types of fuel mixes that are available. These are you know, real opportunities, and this is green hydrogen, not blue hydrogen. So there is we can get creative and think about, you know, the different types of resources that we would consider firm, but I don't think that combustion is going to fall under that category anymore.
Well, just a quick factoid here. According to a long and detailed and good piece in Wall Street Journal a week or so ago regarding hydrogen, which is getting a lot of buzz as of late, less than 5%, Jenny, less than 5% of all the hydrogen produced to do good things, fuel source, in other words, comes from green hydrogen, less than 5%. So we got a long, long ways to go. That doesn't mean, I mean, you know, we started electrifying vehicular transportation a number of years ago. We had a long ways to go and we've made progress. So I don't want to be a Cassandra here, but we got a long ways to go. So let's you and I use our magic powers and take, for all intents and purposes, combustion generation off the table as new generation in the state of Hawaii. Hawaiian Electric recently announced I believe it's round three of RFPs. And they are asking for hundreds, I think somewhere in the 500 megawatt range of new generation, which, you know, just to give you an idea of scale, you already know this, but the peak generation on this island is under 200 total, right? So we're talking 400 or 500 megawatts. I mean, that's a lot of power with the bulk of it, of course, going on Oahu. So the easy question to ask you, much more difficult to answer, is, where is all these hundreds of new megawatts of power generation, green power generation, renewable power generation that's going to pass regulatory muster and judicial review? Where is it going to come from? Where is it going to go?
Thank you, Marco. Yes, this is actually not a very sustainable model that we're encouraging within these RFPs to go after such large swaths of megawatts. We know that we have land and siting issues. We know that we have community concerns about where we site these things, and we're sort of just steamrolling over those concerns. And that's really really unfortunate. One thing that we're not looking at is resources behind the meter. We're still focusing solely on in front of the meter resources, like large scale utility with batteries. And while those are excellent resources, we have, what did you say, 100,000 homes with photovoltaics on them that could be an army of production and produce, even the grant that we're going after with the 10,000 batteries is expected to produce 50 megawatts. These aren't small contributions coming from the demand side of the meter. And that is something that is going to have to be taken seriously. It's going to have to be looked at very seriously. And we're going to probably have to incentivize the utility to do more work at incorporating those types of resources into their resource mix, into their resource planning, and utilizing them during all times of the day to shift load, to move load, to handle when demand is occurring. That's just going to be absolutely imperative. We do not have the land on Oahu to support large scale, a large number of large scale utility projects. It's just not possible. And we know that wind has seen a huge, it's been a huge controversy on the island. And there's reasons why that are justifiable, that are, and we do not want to repeat the mistakes that we've made in the past. So we need to move forward with eyes wide open, understanding what happened in the past and realizing the limitations that we have moving forward, which basically is land in issues, permitting issues, interconnection requirement study issues, and things that are just going to slow the boat down to 10 decades long processes to get these projects online, if we can even get them online, if we have the land to do so. And it's just an incredibly challenging mix right now. So while it's ambitious for the companies to have gone out for such a large proportion of renewables, it's very disconcerting that they may not have planned very well how this would be integrated into the systems on each of the islands, and siting. They're leaving that in the hands of the developers, and those are not the people that are most well equipped to understand the dynamics of what it's like on the island in order to build a development such as they'd be proposing to the utilities under the RFP.
Well, as you're probably aware, the Hawaiian Electric companies will be bringing to a close the interim programs, interim interconnect programs such as CGS, Customer Grid Supply Plus, and CSS sometime later this year in the fall. And according to my conversations with my friends at Hawaiian Electric, the new program will be the SMART DER, SMART, and then DER, Distributed Energy Resources, right? SMART DER. And with the details yet to be finalized, the details yet to be approved by the commission, obviously the details yet to be rolled out to the public, but they're telling us they're coming, right? And from what you know, and I believe the SMART DER, you are intimately familiar with, right? I think that's kind of your baby, or was when you were there at the commission. So I'm going to ask you again to, put on your crystal ball, look into the future eyes here. Do you think that the rollout of the SMART DER program is going to make much of a positive impact in terms of more rapidly incentivizing people to go rooftop solar and storage? In other words, do you think it's going to make much of a difference?
We've all borne witness now to what happened with the battery bonus program, which was, I expected so much more to come out of that program because we offered such incredible incentives that were based off of, analyses that set value capacity at much higher costs or much higher values than avoided costs that are published by the utility. So the thinking about establishing those types of incentives that ultimately paid for half of the battery, half of the system of people's homes that they could install with their solar plant. There was like 0.1 megawatts that was delivered by the time I had left that had actually been installed on the big, on I think it was Maui, and there was maybe like a half a megawatt that was installed on Oahu. And when you consider that, you're giving away free money for these resources. And yes, you have to come up with the other half of it, but this is not, I don't, that is discouraging to me to think about how other programs are going to basically be adopted and how they'll be accepted by the community. We had a lot of stakeholder input when we designed those BYOD, that bring your own device programs, which will be the DER programs, and then just also demand flexibility. But that doesn't mean that the consumer was at the table, and it doesn't mean that we understand what drives their purchasing decisions when it comes to these renewable resources. So we have had early adopters that came online with NEM, and they saw the benefits that, you know, that this was going to be very beneficial and lucrative for them in the short term. We offered most recently the battery bonus program, which was also a very lucrative and generous offer and incentives. And now we're moving to what's going to be the steady state of our programs, which will still include an upfront incentive and then a potential compensation for any energy that's dispatched to the grid during the day. But is that enough to drive a heavy adoption of these types of technologies, of these grid ed technologies? I don't think that we've seen evidence that the incentives are driving that much change in behavior. So I'd say no.
I think, you know, we're talking essentially about virtual power plants, right, which have gotten a lot of buzz as of late, and rightly so. But with the buzz comes hype and over expectations. So, you know, I have been disappointed, as you have been apparently as well, about how slowly things are going, whether it's Sunrun, whether it's Swell, whether it's battery bonus. I mean, I'm a little bit more than a little bit mystified as to why things are taking so long in terms of actually having behind the meter storage and generation capacity ready and available for the utilities to tap into. My question to you is, on the mainland, are there any utilities or regions, whether it's Green Mountain Power in Vermont, which is considered to be quite aggressive and advanced in their thinking, or others, whether they're munis, co-ops, IOUs, who right now are doing a superlative job with having a VPP up and running in terms of the utility being able to tap into behind the meter storage when they need it during peak demand hours? Is there anybody on the mainland who seems to have this down now, or are we all kind of in the same canoe?
We're all in the same canoe. There's some examples in California that are pilots, but they're small pilots, and they're not aggregating over large swaths of area of land. So, I mean, ultimately, when we think about the work that we do with this grant and creating a VPP here in the state of Hawaii, you know, each one of them would be managed island by island. But we would actually be one of the first in the nation to implement a pilot such as that. And that is, you know, really what people would be, okay, they get the backup, the benefits to the consumer and to the resident is that they get the backup energy in case of a blackout. But then we have, this alternative resource to the grid that, you know, that the grid operators can tap into at any time and utilize as a VPP. And that at such a large scale with 10,000 batteries or however we would parse this over the islands is sort of unprecedented. We haven't seen anything that would be in the thousands where these types of resources would come together and provide that type of resource and provide those services, not resource, but yes.
Oh, man, it's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, whether it's trying to tap into tens or hundreds of thousands of rooftop solar and storage, whether it's trying to get multi-megawatts in terms of centralized power generation utility scale. I mean, we're not going fast enough. I've said that. I felt that repeatedly over the years. It's not pointing the finger at anybody in particular. It's just that, you know, our hair should be on fire more in terms of making progress here. And I mean, it's going to take all of us stakeholders to work, continue to work hard to try to make this happen, along with the utility companies, the regulators, people in the state government and so forth. So, oh boy, I mean, so much going on, and we do the best we can, all of us, to keep on moving forward. Well, I think we can bring it to a close now. We barely scratched the surface, but I kind of anticipated that would be the case. And that just means that you and I are going to have to reconvene, hopefully again in 2 weeks, and pick up where we left off. And I'll let you get the closing words here, Jenny, as far as anything else you wanted to share.
I think that one of the highlights of my life has been to serve the people of Hawaii as a commissioner. What is so liberating now is that I'm able to talk about the work that we've done and the issues that are facing the state. And I'm able to actually take action in a way, such as pursuing grants and alternative opportunities of working with the communities and stakeholder engagement in a way that I was not capable of doing as a commissioner. So continuing to trek down the road of really looking out for community, our ohana, our state as a whole. You know, I think both Marco and I can say that we're here to serve the people and all of our capacity, and which is energy experts. And so it's just an honor to be on ThinkTech Hawaii and to be able to preach my word about energy and to share this time with Marco. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. As my beloved grandmother or my aunt used to say, to be continued, there's always more. And we got to leave. Got to leave some juicy stuff for the next time. And there always going to be a next time. So thank you so much for joining me and being on the show today, Jenny. And we'll definitely pick up where we left off the next time. Thank you. Aloha. Ahuiho.
Thank you so much for watching ThinkTech Hawaii. If you like what we do, please like us and click the subscribe button on YouTube and the follow button on Vimeo. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and donate to us at thinktechhawaii.com. Mahalo.